Hey, everybody, welcome. Thanks for joining us today. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I want to welcome you to today's webinar on how to teach collectors to connect with consumers. Developing an instant connection with consumers is a hugely important skill for collectors. Being able to develop a rapport and engage in a conversation can go a long way toward improving collection rates and decreasing disputes and lawsuits. Today in this webinar, which is being brought to you by Peak Revenue Learning, we have a panel of experts here to share their tips and tricks to help collectors connect with consumers during inbound and outbound phone conversations. Before introducing the panel, I did want to take a quick moment and talk about a new video series I just released with help from the great legal minds at Bassford Remley. The videos are a resource that collection agencies can use to send to their creditor clients to educate them about the areas of Regulation F that are going to be of most importance to them. For example, there are videos about the model validation notice, texting and emailing, credit reporting, and more. Best of all, the videos are branded with your logo and a video introduction that allow you to proactively demonstrate your commitment to educating your clients about Regulation F and answering some of the questions that they might have. You can learn more about the series by using the link I just put in the chat window. Now let me introduce you to today's panelists. Mindy Chumley is the co-owner of Solverity in Washington State. She's a current vice president for the Washington Collectors Association and serves on the association's legislative and education committees. She holds several designations from ACA International, including a chief or CCCO, as well as a BA in business administration and postgraduate work in business communications. Mindy is passionate about small business, her family, books, art, volunteering within her local community. She believes we can navigate change with courage and that friendship with people with whom we don't agree is possible. Rich Chion began his career in the default services industry in September 1998 after graduating from Ohio University. He has an extensive background in training, recruiting, and operations management. Rich has been with MRS for 14 and a half years, where he was promoted through many levels in the company to his current position as the Director of Corporate Education and Development in October 2020. Kristen Rawls is the Director of Organizational Development and Training at CVE Companies. She's been in the collection industry for more than 15 years, all of them with CVE. She began as a collector and honestly loved it so much that she stayed in the role for 6 years. Once she was ready to step into management, she became an operations supervisor and then shortly took over the role of supervisor of training. She's been in the training department for roughly 8 years, where she oversees all training, organizational development, and the company's newly implemented diversity inclusion role for its three locations. At CVE, the company has roughly 1,400 employees within her department, having a regular staff of 20 employees. Our format for today will be a panel discussion. As always, we encourage everyone to submit questions and we'll get to them during the course of our conversation. To submit a question, you can drop it into the chat or hit the Q&A tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and send it through us that way. All right. So let's talk a little bit about establishing a connection. And one of the things that I think, and obviously you're the expert, so correct me if I'm wrong, that is really important is tone of voice. So like, first of all, I'll ask you how important tone of voice is, and then maybe you can talk a little bit about how collectors should sound when speaking with consumers. And Mindy, we'll let you kick us off.
Yeah, tone is everything. And it's one of the harder things.
You said in a tone, by the way.
Yes, I said it in a tone. It's everything. And it's hard to train because it's subjective. And so one of the things is you can talk to people all day long about how their tone, you know, you got to work on your tone. And they'll say, no, my tone's not bad. And so one of the things I believe you got to do is you got to record people and you got to listen to the call recordings. You have to show them what they're talking about. And then the second thing I believe is critical is, that you have to remind people that it doesn't matter what you think your tone is. If people tell you you sound snotty or people tell you you sound aggressive, it doesn't matter if that's your intent or not. Tone is all about what people are receiving, not what you think you're projecting.
Yeah, perception is definitely a reality when it comes to definitely tone. We also show, so there's a good video, you can't train it. You have to, just like Mindy said, you know, you have to, it's that practice, it's those call calibrations, whatever it is. We do show a fun video to kind of separate that out. And it's Edward Reed. And I don't know if you guys are probably like, who's Edward Reed? But if you were to YouTube Edward Reed, America's Got Talent, and it's all about it's not what you say, it's how you say it. And so it's just kind of a good lesson on tone, plus it's a super fun video.
I definitely agree with you guys. Like, the role playing is huge. Like, you really need to spend some time on that because it is a hard area to teach. And like you said, Mindy, it's really subjective. And, you know, it is something that takes a lot of practice and a lot of time. So I definitely agree with the role playing aspect of it. And, you know, just teaching agents to not sound monotone. That's a huge, huge factor as well in building that relationship and keeping, you know, that customer experience going as well.
Can you give an example of how you might sort of role play, kind of teaching a tone of voice, Rich?
Well, what I always like to do is I like to try to use some real life experiences. And, you know, what I usually do is I think back to a time where I got stuck on a call, and I use that type of situation where maybe it's the customer might have a little bit stronger opinion about something, where they might have a stronger tone to their voice. So they're kind of all about business. And I kind of use that in a way to have the agents just to really take a moment and kind of reflect on themselves and how they will communicate with each individual customer, because every customer is going to be different. And as an individual agent, you have to be able to adjust to each one of those customers as well.
So Mindy, Kristen, I see you both nodding your heads when Rich was talking about every customer being different. Does that mean then that the tone of voice has to be different in every conversation, or does a collector sort of have to kind of keep the same tone of voice through every call?
That's a hard one, because I expect us to be professional to everyone, and I expect us to be respectful to everyone. And so you got to be careful about telling people that everybody gets treated differently, because if you have somebody really aggressive on the phone, I don't want someone to match them with an aggressive tone. Having said that, yes, I think some people get on the phone and they're, you know, it's Friday afternoon and they're talking about the weekend, you're going to be a little bit looser than somebody who's calling up with really intricate questions about their explanation of benefits. And so you have to match people where their needs are without crossing over into using that as an excuse to meet aggression with aggression.
Okay. Kristen, you know, what have you found to be one of the biggest stumbling blocks that keeps collectors from establishing connections with consumers?
Listening. I mean, I think it's all about listening is what it comes down to. So, you know, like Mindy was just saying, you know, as far as we want to match, but we don't want to mimic, essentially, you know, we don't want to put that aggression out there. It's that assertiveness that we really want, but really kind of what we're going to get that from is actually listening to what the consumer is actually saying, and then maybe asking a few more questions in regards to that. Also with listening, you're going to be able to mirror a little bit, maybe whatever the tone is to an extent, the cadence, maybe, you know, we're not going to have a Southern accent if we don't have a Southern accent, but there's going to be those things that you can pick up on if you're truly listening to the consumer.
Rich, Mindy, what have you found to be the biggest stumbling block that you've seen that keeps collectors from establishing connections with consumers?
I agree with Kristen. It's definitely listening. And one of the things I like to try to promote is active listening. I think that if the customer knows that they've been heard and that you understand their situation, it really helps to build that relationship with them, and it builds that trust factor. And then the other stumbling block that I kind of run into a little bit sometimes is over talking. So it's just being very mindful of, you know, letting the customer, you know, finish the story that they want to tell us and make sure that we have heard that story.
Yeah, for me, the biggest stumbling block really is attitude. And so it goes back to what's happening when people aren't on the call. And so if I hear, you know, a collection team talking and they're talking about, oh, you know, consumers and, you know, oh, they're all like that, or those kind of disparaging remarks behind the call before they're ever on a call, then I know we're going to have problems with tone on that next call, because we're feeling, our collection floor is in a mode where they're feeling cynical, or they're feeling doubtful, or they're feeling, you know, all the things that sometimes may be legitimate. But I think we have to really go back to reminding our collection teams to have this is cliche, but have an attitude of gratitude, where I talk to my team about, you do realize that if these individuals were not behind on their bills or were not facing struggles, that you would not have an income. And so approaching each call with respect and getting that attitude right before you're on the tone or on the phone is going to come through in your tone. And so I try to talk a lot about just approaching people as people. And if we do that, then we are going to listen better and we are going to be respectful and we're not going to overtalk. And because we're remembering that, oh, guess what? These other people on the other side of the phone are humans and they have backstories. And I'm not treating them just like a number or like a cynical game that I'm playing. And if we can remember to approach it from that place, we get a lot better tone on the phone.
Rich, you mentioned active listening. Is that something, we talked about tone not being able to something you can teach. Can you teach active listening? How do you sort of get collectors to really sort of buy into that type of conversation?
Yeah, it's kind of the same that like Mindy was saying earlier, regarding tone. And it's something that you definitely have to practice. And using role-playing is one way to really help with that. So, kind of teaching them to be able to reiterate what they heard to ensure that they have a clear understanding of the customer's situation. So that reiterance is actually really important, I think, to kind of establish that connection there as well.
And Kristen, Mindy, is active listening something that you're teaching in your organizations or something you expect collectors to have or something you think all collection agencies should be training?
Do you think that, we can't just expect people to be active listeners, in my opinion. It is something that we have to train. Do I think that everybody should train it or all collection agencies should train it? Yes, absolutely. We already get a bad rap as far as, it's the collector calling again or whatever it is. But if we could just listen and truly understand kind of why they're in that situation and show those, we call them emotional receipts, give that emotional receipt that we're truly listening, then we're all going to have kind of an easier time and probably more positive attitudes as well, because we're not going to get as beaten down as sometimes we do.
Yeah. And for me, I'm a very small business. So I wear all the hats. And so I remind people that active listening, not only is it effective for connection, but it also will save your day on compliance. And so training people to actively listen for what a dispute is and to ask clarifying questions to lean into that so that we're properly handling those, training active listening to protect against entrapment calls, all those other things that listening really, it's good for consumers, but it's such a good protective habit for us as well.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, I'm going to hit the pause button briefly on our discussion. I want to invite Chris Rickman from Peak Revenue Learning, the sponsor of today's webinar, to say a few words. Chris.
Thank you, Mike. And hello, everyone. We are grateful for the opportunity to sponsor today's webinar. Our company provides Knowledge Source, the leading workforce education, compliance, and micro-learning training platform to companies with collection operations. Knowledge Source is used by our clients to simplify and lower the cost of training new and existing employees, whether those are on-site or remote. Our clients are companies that want to build and maintain a high assurance level. Their folks have mastered and are actually maintaining their mastery of the knowledge required of them, expected of them when interacting with consumers. Knowledge Source automatically builds documentation for your company's training efforts for existing and prospective clients and for regulators. For those of you I don't know or haven't met, I've spent much of my career in executive management of a collection firm. Knowledge Source was created to address many of the challenges and opportunities seen in training staff members. Use Knowledge Source to implement a continuous training cycle, reinforcing the knowledge you expect your staff members to have. Present your collection, client, company policies to folks during onboarding and at specified recurring schedules you set where they acknowledge they've read and understand these policies and procedures. Present tests during your training events, such as onboarding training, and on automatically scheduled recurring schedules to certify members, staff members in areas you require, such as the FDCPA. Present your videos, your slideshows, your audio recordings for that matter, in onboarding training courses and after you release them into their job function in order to reduce the amount of time it takes to reach an acceptable level of proficiency, and afterward to maintain focus on best practices. In summary, KnowledgeSource will close knowledge gaps, promote accountability in your organization, lower the cost of training, document for your prospective and existing clients, for regulators, for auditors, your company's proactive role in preventing errors, compliance, nonconformities, and in maximizing revenue. To find out more about us, please visit peakrevenuelearning.com. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Thanks, Chris. And thanks again to Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. Kristen, I want to circle back to something, a phrase you threw out during one of your most recent answers, and that is emotional receipts. And I was hoping maybe you can kind of expand on that a little bit and sort of talk about how that fits into the, you know, the context of the conversation we're having now about establishing connections with consumers.
Absolutely. So emotional receipts is the wording that we use when you are kind of responding to somebody. So, and to show that you're listening. So we can't see each other while we're on the phones. And so it comes back to how do we let them know that we're listening without us nodding our heads or our feet facing towards them or whatever it is. And so that emotional receipt is really all about, you know, the, okay, uh-huh, I see, or even repeating back what they said. And that's what we call emotional receipts.
Thank you. And Mindy, I wanted to follow up on something you had mentioned before, and that is, you know, collectors have bad calls. How do you sort of make, how do you teach them, or how do you advise they recover from a bad call so it doesn't kind of spill over into the next 3, 5, or however many calls they have during the course of a day?
So one of the things I really try to do and what we're kind of leaning into is to have people recognize that a win is like getting a payment is not the only win. So getting off a bad call where you controlled your emotions, where you did not, I liked what Kristen said, you matched but didn't mimic, where you properly, you know, got through the compliance measures, that calling that still a win can take away some of the weight of a bad call, because they still have like a little box to check to say, oh, I got through a bad call with a win. And so reinforcing that like if in my mind the only win is where I hit all my KPIs and I got all, you know, I got this big payment, your day is going to be like a roller coaster all day long. But if I can tie my emotions to just to consistent performance, then I'm less beat by that bad call. Now, occasionally, of course, somebody gets under your skin, and occasionally we talk to jerks. And so we let people take a break, like honestly, stand up, go for a walk, get a drink, you know, and recognize that you do have to have a reset after those painful calls. But limiting how many we really call a painful call and giving positive wins for other metrics helps, I think.
Okay. We have a question that came in from the audience. What tools, methods do you use specifically to help train for active listening? My younger collections team is currently less focused on listening and more focused on being right.
So I'm a teenager. I have a story. So I have a teenager. She's 15. I have a 9-year-old too. I'm going to have teenage girls for like the next, I don't know, 13 years. It's insane. But anyway, my 15-year-old, we did this game with them in their youth group. And I came in and did it with my team too. And what we did is we were doing a financial literacy class. And so we had everyone come in and they signed in for attendance that day. We just said, hey, sign in. And then later in the class, we said, we read them what they had signed, and what they had signed said something to the effect of they had to come do yard work at our house that following Saturday. Nobody even read it. And so that really helped my teenager see, oh, ding, ding, ding. But we can do the same thing on call in training, where we'll like put clues into calls, or will put clues into the training methods that they miss. And so then you train people that, hey, in order for you to be right, you have to catch these clues. And so having specific calls where that's like little gems are hidden into their training metrics. So later, because you're right, they want to be right. And so you have to catch them being wrong because they didn't listen in order to train that that's a skill.
That's a good one. So a couple of the things that we use is, in one of them is super easy. We show a lot of videos. And then we talk about those videos, but I'm sure that you guys have all seen that Listen Linda video with that cute little boy. And all he wants is those cupcakes or whatever it is. And so then we just ask questions about that video afterwards. And we ask really ridiculous questions that you wouldn't typically know, like what's the brother's name and, you know, things like that. And so then that way, they don't necessarily know that we're going to ask those questions, but it just focuses on then prepping them into the act of listening. You know, I know that this wasn't a specific question, but as far as matching and mirroring as well, we show that rapport is very natural. Now, if you're in the office, it's a little different than if you're on Zoom. So if you're in the office, we just tell people to have a conversation, introduce themselves, get to know each other, and about like 3 to 5 minutes in, you can actually tell everybody to pause and not move. And whoever they're talking to, and I'm not even joking about this, it's weird how this happens, but if somebody's standing there with their arms crossed, the person talking with them will have their arms crossed or the hands in their pocket, and they both have their hands in their pocket. And so like, we just like to show them how natural it is to build that rapport, because people get to think, like overthinking it, and then it's almost impossible to train. So we just kind of take steps back a little bit in order to show them. Also, body language is huge. They can't see you, but if you're not sitting up, which drives that active listening, then they're not going to actively listen. So we talk a lot about kind of those behind the scenes things that that don't usually happen during our phone call, but it will help drive those listening things on a phone call.
Yeah, Kristen, smile. You can hear it.
Yeah, yeah, there's a reason they say smile and dial, right?
Yep, I can hear it.
For sure.
Rich, do you have any exercises or drills that help teach active listening that you wanted to share? Or did we lose Rich?
Oh, no.
We might have lost him. He'll come back. Another question that came in, how do we train our collectors to connect with the consumer who absolutely denies to hear or give clear rejections to discuss the debt? I guess if you're having a conversation with a consumer who is just absolutely, you know, who is fighting everything, how do you establish that connection?
You know, I mean, sometimes you can't, but I will generally, what I do when I'm on the phone with somebody like that is I'll say, hey, I get it. It's no fun. Can we, you know, get to the other side and see if we can get it resolved? But I get it. Sometimes can break through where you recognize that nobody wants to deal with this, but we're going to make it less painful. That acknowledgement that it can be painful or difficult can help sometimes.
Yeah. There's a couple questions that, and again, it doesn't always help and we can't always fix everything. Here's the thing. If they all paid their bills, we wouldn't have jobs. So we sometimes have to let them go. But as far as a couple questions, what's important to you and what problems are you trying to solve? And we'll ask those back to back. And it tries to drive in a little bit to hone in on maybe what's really going on, and to then also maybe change it. So then that way we're still allowing them to tell us kind of what's going on, and they can complain a little bit, but we're directing the conversation a little bit better. But like Mindy said, it's kind of trial and error. Is it going to work with everyone? Absolutely not. Just another tool in your tool belt to attempt to get through that breakthrough.
Mm-hmm. So Rich, I'm not sure if you heard, but the question is, if you're on the phone with a consumer who is just not giving you anything, they're fighting, they're being negative, how do you, you know, is there any way you can try and establish a connection with those types of consumers?
You know, that one's a really hard one. And I think a lot of us have dealt with those types of situations. And I think it's really just, you know, being able to engage the customer, just a standard conversation. You know, just having some general communication sometimes goes a long way and gets them to really open up and gets them to communicate with you. And, you know, just having an idea or having a plan of where you want to go and what you want to accomplish in the call, I think is important too. But, you know, if you have a customer that's really not wanting to give you much information or just constantly, you know, everything's a no, you know, at that point, let them know that, you know, you understand, you know, that right now may not be the best time. And just being able to let them know that you've heard their situation again and, you know, work maybe on a follow-up if that's, you know, the necessary thing, because not everyone's going to, you know, buy into it and want to take care of that, you know, that bill at that moment.
One of the other things is to give an alternative method. Sometimes people don't want to talk on the phone. My husband hates to talk on the phone. And so like he would want to pay his bill, but would not want to have a conversation. And so sometimes I'll say, hey, I get it. Sometimes, you know, calls can be really difficult. You can try our website. And so giving people, or, you know, you can look us up, or some giving another option sometimes will give people a little bit of grace where maybe they'll come back. And then, yeah, Kristen, I mean, what's national average rate of collections? It's like last I heard it was low, like 18%. I mean, 82% of the time we're going to fail, and that's okay. And so giving some resilience to your team that you don't have to succeed on every call. You want to have compliance right on every call, and you want to up your averages. And if you can have good tone and, you know, get through, then you're going to up your percent where you're successful more often, but you've got to have a tolerance to know and be okay with that too, or you're not going to last in this industry.
One of the things I've heard mentioned a couple of times is sort of asking questions and sort of trying to probe. And I think someone else mentioned sort of learning backstories. How do you sort of, you know, like it's more, you know, like there's an art to conversation. It's not just, you can tell when someone's kind of just sort of trying to make small talk or asking questions just for the sake of asking questions and not really sort of, you know, like there's a right way to ask those types of questions. How do you do that? How do you teach that? How do you sort of train for that? You know, let's talk a little bit about that part of, you know, how to kind of, you know, that part of establishing a connection. And maybe Kristen, you can kick us off.
Yeah. So first of all, just know that asking questions doesn't build rapport. Like just, you know, plain old questions, like you said, just doesn't build rapport, you know? So they have to be applicable to the conversation to an extent. But also, so going back to the tone, right? So like going, how do you ask those questions? Are they yes or no questions? Like we need to also drive and move forward as well. But questions can build that rapport and that connection. However, it's the right question. So the way that we train our employees to ask questions would be through the call flow. So whether it's we need them to build credibility during a certain part, or you know, these questions need to be more towards that financial piece of it. And then how do you ask those questions, right? It's not, are you working? It's where do you work at? And then if you've had a similar job, throw in those pieces. However, don't say that you've had a similar job and have never actually worked that job before. So there's just those opportunities, but really treat it more as a conversation is what we train to, rather than 20 questions and then have the consumer feel like they're being interrogated.
Because that thanks for saying that, because it's an interrogation versus a conversation of two totally types of experiences, and sort of being able to kind of have a conversation with somebody is a lot different. You know, Mindy, you're talking about your teenagers. My 13-year-old is trying to manage that. He's trying to have conversations, but they always come across as interrogations. And it's really about sort of tone of voice. And that's kind of part of the conversation we keep having with him. And one of these days, hopefully he'll listen. But, you know, Kristen, you mentioned, you know, sort of personal information. And that segues to something else I wanted to throw out there to the three of you. How much personal information should collectors share when establishing a connection? And should that information always sort of be truthful or not? And Richard, I'll let you kick us off on that part. Oh. We lost Richard again. We'll come back to Richard. Mindy, you can start us this time.
Yeah, truthful always. And I would say generic over specific. So when I'm trying to have a conversation, I will say, hey, I know what it's like to have to dig out. Or I get that too. My daughter's going through something that's hard. You know, I appreciate you sharing. Like truthful always, generic always would be my recommendation. And remember that we all are in different contexts. So I own a very small agency and the people I call are probably my neighbors. And so even more so, I want to be more generic just to protect everyone's privacy, not just mine, but to protect consumers' privacy too. But they don't honestly want to know a million details about my life. They just want to know that I'm human and that I care about them. And so I don't want my collectors telling these big long stories. It's a waste of time, honestly, right? Get on to the next call. And you can say a lot in just, hey, I get it. I've been there. I've had to dig out. Or this has been a hard season for all of us. You know, some really generic scripts that still have empathy work. But yeah, truthful always.
Okay. Richard, the question was, you know, how much information should a collector share to help establish a connection, and how truthful should that information be?
You know, I always kind of think of it like there's a difference and there's a line between being personal and personable. And mm-hmm. it's okay to acknowledge the situation that they're in. And even maybe in just some cases to make it easier is to let the person know if you haven't been in that situation, it's okay. But letting them know that you've helped others in a similar situation to them without going into the details, and you're able to hopefully come up with a solution that's going to benefit everybody.
Okay. Kristen, how does a collector know if he or she has established a connection? You know, it seems like a very sort of subjective situation.
That's a good question. I don't know if they know. Like, I feel like there's like this switch that all of a sudden just goes off and you're just like, okay, you know, I'm getting it, and we're actually moving forward with the process. So how to describe that though? I don't know how you describe that. Mindy, Rich?
You know, I think for me, when people start giving me any level of information, I know we're making progress because there's a tiny bit of trust there. So if someone will verify their date of birth, you know, we have more connection than we did at the beginning of the call. And so I think it's information. The ultimate information is their bank account information, right? Or a debit, or that's the ultimate trust of information. But if you think about it, like, we all hear things all day long, be careful who you talk to, and there's all these scammers, and don't give your phone out. And so anyone willing to trust me with their phone number, or trust me with their place of employment, or trust me with a payment, we obviously have a connection because we've gone from in their mind being a scam to being credible. And so I think you know when you get information.
That was great, Mindy. Thank you.
I was going to also say too, Mindy, off of that, is I think sometimes too, it's listening to the customer and hearing the tone of their voice also change. You know, because a lot of times in the beginning of the call, they're very cautious on what they want to provide to us. And I think as the call goes on and we start to establish that connection, if we get that customer very comfortable with us, they get more relaxed, so their voice tone changes, and they really do open up and provide us a lot of information. And sometimes they'll provide us information that we don't even, you know, need to ask for, but it's very, you know, vital to the call, like you said, about getting their information.
Well, an understanding. So we did, I might be jumping ahead here, Mike, I apologize, but we just did a big training a couple weeks ago on how to get people to verify their date of birth, like, or their second demographic. Like, there was this big training. And what we ended up having to do was pull a bunch of calls where it worked, where somebody got on the phone, and, you know, that is like hit or miss, and it's getting harder because people are getting more cynical and less willing. And so we really drilled into just that skill, how to get somebody to verify their date of birth so you can give the rest of the call. And it really did involve a few things. And they're all things that you all know, you've heard a million times, but it involved smiling, and it involved the confidence in your voice, and it involved pausing. You know, a lot of times my team were giving up too soon, where someone would say, well, I'm not going to verify that. And the collector would say, oh, okay, well, I'm going to have to let you go then. And it's like, no, that's not over. We're going to smile and we're going to say, I totally get it. I understand. You know, I'm not asking you to give me information. I just need to confirm your date of birth. And suddenly you get 50% more. And so showing some good calls where it worked and where the smile and the pause and the tone worked, that's back to your younger generation. You got to show them. They're not going to believe you until you show them. And so you show them successful calls, and suddenly they're more willing to try. Sometimes I think it sounds like Pollyanna. Oh, smiling, that doesn't really help. It's like, oh yeah, it does. Here's some calls to prove it.
Is there anything to be learned from the call, from listening to the calls that don't work too?
Yeah. They're harder.
Right. Okay. We talked about, you know, so you talked about verifying the second piece of identification, that initial phase of the call, getting through the identity, getting through the mini Miranda. It just seems like that is a situation that makes it all but impossible to establish a connection. But obviously that's not true. There are plenty of people that do it. Do you try to make that connection right away, or do you just try and get through that difficult part and then make the connection? How do you manage that part of the conversation, Kristen?
So I think, yes, you can absolutely build that rapport and that connection during the verification process. You know, as far as smiling while you first make that phone call, and it's that attitude, you know, that positive attitude every single time, you know, you have to forget that last situation and go into the new situation. Even something like some portfolios that we have, we verify by first and last name and then date of birth. And so sometimes it's even like happy birthday. If it's their birthday, tell them happy birthday as you're going through that call. And so it's kind of making it that personalizing, that verification, and you're not so robotic through it. If you're robotic through it, it's going to be hit or miss if you actually get to build that connection based on how that other person is. So there is an opportunity to build that connection at the beginning of the phone call, depending on what information you're working with and how you go into that phone call.
Well, and again, to remember that it's people. Like, are you going to tell somebody your information if they sound crabby? No, you're not. And so telling people, you know, let's think about who would you tell on the phone your date of birth, or who would you confirm? And it's somebody that's not being a jerk, and you can hear it on the phone. Yes, Mike, I have some like bad calls from way before that I'll play, but I don't want to play bad calls from people who are on the team right now, especially in a group setting, because then you're just having shame or those kind of non-successes. But old calls to say, listen to this, can you hear the snark in this voice? Yes, you can. That's why this person doesn't work here anymore. And those bad examples are instructive.
Just checking to see if Rich is there. I think we might have dropped him again. I'll come back. I did this weekly talk show type event called the Talk Off every week, and we were having a conversation last week about sort of the future of collections. And one of the panelists hypothesized or predicted that video calls sort of either are coming or something that might help collectors. And I wanted to throw it to the panel to see if you thought that, you know, if collectors could engage, you know, through video calls with consumers, if that would help or hurt, you know, sort of for the purposes of this discussion, you know, in terms of establishing a connection. Because I know, Kristen, you talked about body English and smiling, you know, and why you can hear that during a voice call. Do you think having video would help or hurt, you know, having collectors establish connections?
That's interesting. That's really interesting.
Anxiety here.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that, I mean, it could go both ways, right? And I think a lot of it has to do with the consumer and like, are we having them sign off on that? Is it going to be okay? You know, I'm assuming we're just not going to Zoom them really quick and tell them, hey, pop into this Zoom.
Right.
But yeah, I think that there are some definite benefits in there. There's going to be things that we could, right? Like we talked about body language and that we're actually showing them that we're listening. And maybe they're going to, I mean, even walking them through something, if they have to go see something, maybe we could share our screens. That like it could open up a whole new world essentially. And if the consumer would be open to it, why? I think it could only help us most honestly.
Well, and I wonder, Kristen, I wonder if there'd be a way to do it, like you said, where people would opt in. So you wouldn't do it right at the beginning, but let's say that you're doing a negotiation or you're working on a settlement or reviewing backup where people opt in, I could see it. Well, I said I was having anxiety because I could imagine those few bad abusive calls being really personal
and
super painful, where it's like, I don't think we're going to be doing that all the time, because suddenly, you know, this mean person has ammunition now to be specific to your personhood, and that could be really abusive. But if it was an opt-in for specific things, I think it could be a really neat tool.
Yeah, I instantly go to that TV show that used to be like the Repo Show, you know, and they did the video of the, like, that's where I went to. I was like, holy buckets, are we going to make a TV show next or what's going on?
Yeah, cool. Well, and then you have like the idea of someone screen sharing and sharing.
Yes.
But yeah, there's some scary things in there. I don't know about that.
There
but
is. There's probably a lot of details that have to be worked out.
Definitely. Definitely the screen share is really concerning.
Richard, circling back to what we were talking about before, establishing connection during the initial part of the call, is that something that you're working with your collectors on doing, or do you sort of wait to get through that mini Miranda and the identification part to kind of start to establish a connection?
Well, you know, it really depends, because some customers, you may need to build that rapport and establish that connection right away. Again, they're not always pleased getting that phone call. So I think it's sometimes being able to, if you have to, you know, let them know that you'd be happy to answer their questions, or you'd be happy to, you know, help them with any concerns that they would have. You just want to get through a few pieces of information to make sure you're talking to the right person. And I think once we can establish that verification and that mini Miranda, then making that acknowledgement of their, you know, question and being able to answer it appropriately, I think is also, you know, necessary in most cases.
Yeah, Rich, you brought up a really good point as far as, you know, kind of describing out how we're going to do it. You know, so we're going to go through the verification process. And so even when it comes to, if you just have to, you know, ask them a list of questions, just telling them that to introduce, like, hey, this is what's next. This is what's next. So I'm glad that you brought that up.
Yeah, I like that. Well, and even saying I have some good news, you know, because we do some emergency room doctors. And so sometimes we can help people get charity. And so saying to people, I don't want you to give up there. You know, there may be some tools that I can give you. So hang in there. And of course, always honest, only if you really do, but being able to say, I think you're going to find we've got more solutions than you think. I think you're going to find the process easier, so that there's a little bit of, they want to stay on the call to see what happens. Won't work every time, but it will more than if you don't.
Good point. I had a question and I just lost it. A question that came in from the audience, I'll ask that while I try and think of mine again. How do you keep consumers on the call if they don't want to talk or verify their details, such as those scenarios we're talking about? How do you keep them from hanging up?
Well, we can't just stop them necessarily. However, there are some preventative measures, though. You know, as far as if you haven't built that rapport, it's going to be a little bit harder. But, you know, if you have truly listened to them, so if they said, I just don't want these phone calls anymore, or, you know, whatever it is, if that's their excuse, then you can say, okay, so just a couple more minutes on the phone and we may not have to ever call you again. And so it's just really listening to what their big complaint is, and then talking to that complaint and turning it into a benefit, essentially, could keep them on the phone.
I do think that's going to be one thing that we need to be careful, though, with the new Reg F rules, where time and place are. And so I think we're going to have to look at those, even like it may be best to let them go in some cases where you don't want to lean in and talk people who don't want to be on the phone.
Well, I think that also goes back to what you were talking before, Mindy, about sort of using alternative channels at that point. Okay, I don't want to talk on the phone. You know, would you prefer an email or text message or something else that might, you know, that might help too.
Mm-hmm.
Is the conversation we're having different if the call is inbound versus outbound? You know, if you've got someone who's calling in, I'm going to assume it's easier to establish a connection. Is that true? Does it matter where, you know, sort of whether the call's coming in or whether the call's going out?
I think, for myself, I can answer that one too, is really depends on the caller and the reason for the call. And if they're calling in to make a payment, you know, it's definitely something that's easier. But if they're calling in with regards to a dispute or fraud or something on those standpoints, it can be a little harder. And that's where it just takes a little bit of imagination. And it takes a lot of just work from the agent's level to build that connection, you know, being able to understand, you know, why they're calling in and acknowledging that situation and showing that you're there to help them. Can really help. But I think, you know, if they're calling in to make that payment, they already have their mind made up as to what they want to do. So that connection is a little bit easier versus something that might be around some type of special handling.
Anyone else want to weigh in on inbound versus outbound?
Yeah, it depends. You can, there's all kinds of fun water in both pools.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit. We talked about establishing, learning backstories. We talked about sort of, you know, conversation versus interrogation. What type, what kind of questions should collectors be asking? You know, like we've all been on the phone with like either collections or tech support or something like that. They start asking you about the weather, where you are or what your plans are for the weekend. And sometimes, like I said, it just sort of feels forced and doesn't really kind of flow. So what kind, you know, how do you sort of direct the type of question that should be asked? I'll let anyone who wants to go first, go first. Sorry.
I can just jump in. I think it really depends too, you know, on the customer. Some customers are very task oriented. They're very direct. They just want to get their payment out of the way. They want to just handle their business and move on. So, you know, depending on the call, I think it's where, you know, as a collector, you need to be able to gauge your customer. And at that point, you know, find out what's appropriate. You know, would it be appropriate, you know, to ask them about the weather or, you know, how their weekend was, you know, maybe while you're trying to either, you know, set up an arrangement or if you're trying to review something on the account, you know, maybe making that small talk might take away some of that awkward silence in the call. But I think you really have to kind of gauge the customer really. And I would say it's up to the customer really at that point on which way the agent's going to lead, if they're going to go with those types of questions or not.
Yeah, I think too, kind of trying to always remind yourself, okay, these are humans on the other side. And so if someone calls in and they say, listen, I really have to get into the doctor because my daughter's ill and my mom just died, you know, saying, oh, what are your weekend plans? Obviously not appropriate. Saying something like, my huge condolences, I've totally been there, it's painful, I'm going to try to help you. Way more appropriate. And so trying to not be so rote that you can't respond to people as people, and that you're keeping your questions appropriate to what's happening in the call is a good reminder. Sometimes we do, I can't remember who said it, but where you go robot mode, there's nothing good happening on that.
No, it's that emotional receipt is what it comes back with. They are humans, you know, let them know that you listened, but then also that, you know, we have jobs to do. And so the questions I think are just more assertive and applicable to the call. Whereas like Rich said, you know, as far as if there is downtime and you feel it appropriate, you know, while you're waiting on doing something or whatever it is, that would be the time, but not just to randomly break out in the middle of the phone call and ask about the weather or whatever. So they don't want to be on the phone call as much as we want to move on to the next one, is what it comes down to.
You know, one of my favorite questions to ask people is, are you trying to close a loan?
Yes.
Get so much information. Because if somebody's calling you out of nowhere, there's something going on. And so when someone, if you ask, are you trying to close a loan? Are you trying to get into a new place? That can give you all kinds of context to know what their outcome is. Are they just checking through a list? You know, so sometimes around here we have an enormous population of people, like we have a housing crisis. And so a lot of people are trying to get into apartments out of, like, they're living in their cars. Obviously that outcome is going to be different than somebody who says, yes, I'm trying to buy a house. And so having that one question, are you trying to close a loan? Are you trying to get into a new place? That can give you information that can kind of shine light on where they are headed. It's a power question. I like it.
That's a good one.
Richard, your answer gave me spurred two follow-up questions. First, how do you know what type of conversation the consumer wants to have? See, it was such a tough question when his internet cut out. Kristen, Mindy, do either one of you want to take that first? How do you know what, you know, like he talked about the different types of, you know, consumers. Some consumers just want to get through it. Some want to have a conversation. How do you know which type of consumer you've got?
I really think it comes back to listening to them and what their end in mind is when they're first, I mean, whether they're calling in or whether you're calling them, right? I mean, we don't even have to ask. Once we get through verification and they know who we are, they're going to tell you typically. And it's all about listening then on kind of those responses is how to move forward. So that initial conversation that you have should be that that factor in there.
Yeah, I totally agree. If somebody's calling up and they have their account number and they say, I have my card, what do you need? You know, then, you know, they just want to get this done. I don't want to talk all day long. So getting through the minimum basics to get the payment, get them the receipt. So if they're calling you volunteering specific information, they don't want to have a long conversation. They just want to get the task done. And that's great. Those are very efficient for us. Somebody calls up and, you know, they sound overwhelmed and they're like, I got this letter, I don't know what to do. That's, you're going to have more of a conversation there.
So Rich, you said something during one of your most recent answers and it kind of spurred a question. Who's in charge of the conversation? Who's leading the conversation? Is it the customer or is it the consumer?
Well, it's more, you know, the agent obviously needs to have control of the call. And it's really important to find a balance between, you know, both your company and your client needs, but also with the customer needs. So I think, you know, there's a way to kind of do it. And it's really being confident in how you're communicating with the customer. But at the same time, you know, asking the right questions to let them answer, but then allowing that answer to kind of lead you to the next question. So really, you've got control of the call, but it's almost like a game where you're trying to show that the customer has a little bit too. But it's based on the agent's responses and questions. It's really making them have that call control.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then again, the last question I wanted to throw out there to the three of you, is there data or is there like a way to objectively confirm that collectors who establish connections collect more money? Is that something that you can kind of point to, or is it sort of just something that you kind of have to believe?
I don't know if there's any... Well, I guess we do. I mean, there's technologies, I guess, you know, that measure the tone of the call and things like that. But that's if you have them. Other than that, call calibrations are really going to kind of lead you in that direction as far as call monitoring. But I don't know if there's any exact data that's out there. But I think that you can absolutely, as a human being, listen and know that your team is either connecting or not connecting. And I have to tell you that I believe that if you have a better connection with someone that you're going to naturally collect more.
Yeah, anecdotally in my office at work, we did did mini Miranda training and how to get people to do DOVs, and our next week was better.
There you go. See? All right, before wrapping up, what I want to do is go around the panel and give each of you a chance to share what you think the most important takeaway is. You know, as people go back into their office and either get back on the phone to make calls or receive calls or to work with collectors who are making or receiving calls, you know, in terms of establishing a connection, what do you think is the most important thing that they need to be focused on? And Rich, before your internet cuts out again, we're going to go with you.
Awesome. No, I definitely think, you know, just pulling up, having a quick huddle, you know, with everybody and, you know, kind of going through some of those, you know, role play scenarios, you know, kind of talk through maybe some of the hurdles that maybe you've seen over the course of, you know, the last couple of months or the last even, you know, 18, 19 months, you know, that we've been mostly working remotely and things of that nature too. I think it's important to kind of take a moment and reflect back on those so that we have our appropriate responses in place and everyone's comfortable with the answers that they're going to be providing to their customers.
Excellent. Thank you. Mindy?
You know, for me, it really goes back to what happens before you get on the phone, remembering that people are people and leaning into having a good attitude about it. I really like Malcolm Gladwell's book, Talking with Strangers. It's a beast of a book, but it talks about how we communicate with people we don't know and how to approach that. And I think if you get that attitude right, you're going to have a whole lot better outcome when you start doing specific calls.
Good advice. Thank you. Kristen?
I'll go with listening. Listening is going to be one of the biggest things that's going to let you know what the next steps are or how to move forward with the call, those types of things. And then, like Mandy said, it's prior to the phone call, right? So your body language, your attitude. So it all goes in it and it all blends together. If you have a better attitude about how you're going to go into the phone call, it's probably going to lead the phone call into a better direction.
Excellent. Good advice. Well, Kristen, Mindy, Rich, thank you so much for sharing your time, your insights, your expertise with our audience today. On behalf of everybody who's watched and listened and is walking back into their office better educated, that's because of you. So thank you very much for sharing today. Thanks again to Chris Rickman and Peak Revenue Learning for sponsoring today's webinar. please check them out at peakrevenuelearning.com. We're back tomorrow talking about rebuttals. If you haven't signed up for that yet, there's a link on the events calendar on accountsrecovery.net. We hope to see you back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. Until then, everybody, enjoy the rest of your day and take care. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks. Bye.